Going through childbirth doesn't necessarily mean you have to quit your sport.
What's up, dear team? Welcome to our second episode of 2024, which is also the second episode that I recorded during the Hahnenkamm race in Kitzbühel mid-January. The first episode was with German race driver Sophia Flörsch, and the second one is technically with another racer. We're taking it to track and field. And today's team member is Danish-Norwegian, which is why this one will be in English once again. She is a total powerhouse, literally traveled the world several times, just became a mom, as you already heard, and is now investing it all to go and make it to the 2024 Olympics in Paris. We're speaking about manifestation, mindset. She brought us a brand new head coach, and I love it. We've never heard this one before. And shares with us why race day routines can actually become an obstacle. So I am more than excited to have you on board, and welcome to the team. This is Amalie Juhl. It's a big one. It's probably also the common thinking, I can imagine. How was this experience for you?
Yeah, no, I was excited to share my news that I was pregnant. And everyone kept saying like, oh, that's wonderful, but I'm so sad to see you leave the sport. And I'm like, whoa, what? No, just because I'm
not
having
my plan.
Just because I'm having a baby doesn't mean it's not forcing me to quit. And that kind of gave me even more motivation to prove everyone that no, that doesn't, just because you have a baby, you can still work out every day and find the time to put in the training and still succeed.
So you're a new mom, and somebody just said that they saw you with your baby here yesterday. What has it been like? Has it been as, you know, obvious as to everyone else that you have to quit the sport or your career after having a kid?
No, I mean, I think we got really, really lucky with our kid because he's super kind and calm. So he, up until now, like, he's been joining me for practice every single day. And
oh,
he
no
just
way.
Sits there and looks, and he's super happy and sleeps well. So I'm getting my rest at night, and which is super important when I'm working out and stuff, that I'm still able to get my rest and recovery. And so far it's been going really, really well, and I'm just hoping that their progression is gonna keep going.
And your progression as well. I'm very excited to speak about your Olympic preparation in just a minute. But we, and our audience, let's put it that way, our audience still doesn't know who I'm talking to right now. So in my podcast and my episodes, I always invite my guests to describe or introduce themselves kind of like on a FIFA card. You know the FIFA cards?
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, we don't have to know your defensive skills and the number you would give yourself.
All my stats.
You know, you can add and throw some stuff, some stats in there if you want to, but feel free to share those facts about you that really matter to you.
Yeah, well, I could start off with my name. My name is Amalie Juhl, and I'm a Norwegian-Danish 400-meter hurdler. Currently I live in Norway, and I have together with my fiance now, thank you, we have a little son named Storm, who is 4.5 months. So yeah, that's where I'm at. I've been running track my entire life since I was 9 years old, and that's been a big part of my identity. And so I always thought it was kind of a little bit scary to think about, like, what's going to come after the sport, just because, like, I've always saw myself just doing that. But I think being a mom, it's kind of helped me, I don't know, evolve a little bit. So it's good. It's nice.
So interesting to hear that you're thinking about the time after your career. You're still so young. You're in your prime right now. You know, where are these thoughts coming from? Or is that a fear even? Can I call it a fear?
Oh, you can definitely call it a fear. Because I always, whenever I start thinking about it, I freak out. I get a mini panic attack just because, like, that's what I've been doing my entire life. But at the same time, I think it's healthy to kind of know that it's going to come to an end eventually. Mm. So having a backup plan is always good, something to fall back on after the sport. So I took some studies and got a bachelor degree in the United States when I went to college there. So at least I have something to build off of when the time comes to put the spikes on the shelf.
That is so interesting. But you're not going to put the spikes on the shelf anytime soon, I can imagine.
No, not yet. I don't feel ready yet.
But let's actually dive into, if you're happy to do so, into how you started running, because obviously I did my research on you. Mm. We don't know each other yet. And you have had quite the, let's say, moving upbringing.
Yeah.
Your dad definitely has had a job that took you and your family throughout the entire world. I read Pakistan. I read Thailand. Mm. And I heard that Thailand has been quite the pivotal episode for you and your career today, right?
You have done your research. Wow.
Of course. Gotta say, that's
impressive. Yeah, we moved around a lot. I think we stayed at each place like no more than 2 years. So from the age of 12 till 23, I was like constantly on the move. And that made it a little bit hard with sports, just because the way sports was like set up in the different places, it was all like school based, so we had different seasons, and so in the fall, like, I couldn't run track all year like I did in Norway, so I had to play soccer or football in the fall and touch rugby, and then eventually,
all right, I saw a picture of you playing rugby. That was impressive, actually.
It was really fun. And then eventually track came along, and that was like my season, my time to shine. They didn't really have that much experience with coaches, and it was quite limited. So a lot of the times at track practice, the coaches would be like, okay, everyone, just look at what Amalia does and just copy her. And if I was high jumping and I didn't make the bar, then they're like, okay, next time try jumping a little bit higher. And I was like, okay, thank you. That's great advice. Let me just do that. But when I came to Thailand, I was a little frustrated because I'm like, oh, I want to do this. Like, I've always had a dream that I was going to become a professional track athlete and do this for a living and go to the Olympics and all that. But I saw that my time was running out and I wasn't getting the results that I should be getting. But then I got to Thailand and
couldn't jump a little higher and just run a little bit faster.
I needed a little more. And then I met my coach. He was a former 800 meter runner from Italy. Mm-hmm. And he put me in contact with and coached me throughout high school and put me in contact with the college that I went to at USC. Which definitely was the turning point for my career. Helped me get my stats back up and results better, and then I got to college, that's when it really took off, I qualified for my first Olympics, which is really, really cool.
It is really cool. And I mean, you're saying it so nonchalantly right now. Then I just went to USC, you know. Coming from Norway, moving around, being based in a different country, I feel like it's not just super logical or like the easiest decision to make to move to the United States and, you know, switch everything up. How did that come about?
No, that actually, I don't know when I started thinking of doing that, but for as long as I remember, it was always a dream to go to the States, because I'd like, seen the movies and seen how like they would combine track with school, and I knew I had to take some form of like further education or higher education, just because like I've always had that in, like, the back of my mind, like, what if track doesn't work out?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I need something to fall back on. So I knew that I wanted to go to university, and then I thought, like, the United States is a perfect, the way the school system works there, it's possible to combine both.
For athletes, so, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's really good. So the decision was really easy for me to just go there. But then you gotta start doing research on, okay, which school should I decide to go to?
Mm-hmm.
Which school can I get into? And all that. So that was a whole thing. But I landed on USC, and I was so happy with that decision because I had 4 great years and really evolved as an athlete. So yeah, I was really thankful for that experience.
And you made your dream become reality. And actually, as you said that, as a little girl, you always had this vision of yourself being a pro track athlete and making it to the Olympics. Like, where did that come from? Where do you think that comes from? Because that's a very precise dream, right?
Yeah. I've always been really, really competitive with my, especially with my older brother. We were competing. It was everything, like running up the stairs, brushing our teeth, whatever we could compete in.
Brushing our teeth,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a competition you want to win, but
yeah.
It was, everything we did was a competition. So my parents, they got really super annoyed with me. So they, I also had like way too much energy in the throughout the day. So they, so they sent me to track practice to try to get some of that energy out and just like let me run yeah. around and compete all day with my friends and whoever wanted to race me. So that was kind of
whoever
the start of it.
Whoever wanted to race me.
Yeah, because everything had to be a competition, even in like board games. And yeah. And then we would have these like little journals that you could fill out and give to your friends. And they all had like these pages that, you fill out what hair color you are, what eye color, and who your favorite celebrity is, yeah. celebrity crush and all that. And then there was always one part that said, what's your goal in life or
dream job.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then I always wrote down, I want to make it to the Olympics. So I found one of those journals when I was like maybe 9 or 10 years old a couple of weeks ago. And I saw that.
You manifested it when you were
yes,
nine.
I did.
Oh my God.
So yeah, for as long as I can remember, actually.
So you made it to the Olympics through your work at USC.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience for you? Actually going, actually feeling your dream in your body.
At the Olympics?
Yes.
Oh, it was amazing. I remember stepping into the Olympic Village and just seeing all the different athletes from the different sports. And that in itself is such a fun experience to just walk around and look at the athletes and try to figure out what sport they play, because there's so many different sports and different body types and there's something for everyone.
Yes.
Which is really, really cool. And yeah, it's just a huge event. It's the biggest stage possible to compete on, and so it was. I had a great experience, and ever since my first time being there, I've been like longing back. So I went to the Tokyo Olympics, but I false started in the semifinals. So. I still feel like I need redemption, and so I need to make it back to another one. So that's where my goal is coming from now. I need to make it back to Paris.
And I'm already speaking in we. We are currently on that mission, right? So obviously you're coming back from having storm, but you're working on your comeback.
Yeah,
your redemption.
Yeah.
Plan?
I am. So it's going pretty well. I'm having steady progress in training, and unfortunately I had to go through a emergency C-section. Mm-hmm. So that obviously set me back a little bit more, but it's been going well so far, and I still have a couple months till my season opener, so I'm just gonna keep pushing and hoping for no setbacks, because we can't afford that right now.
No.
So
no setbacks.
So yeah.
Where's the season opener going to be?
We're actually heading to the Bahamas for the World Relays.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're going to try to qualify our relay team in the 4x400 meter.
Mm-hmm.
4x400 meters, no hurdles. So that's probably going to be the first, and then we'll take it from there.
And maybe you can help me out here a little bit. So I know that your specialty are the 400 meter hurdles, mm-hmm. obviously, but you just said you're going to do 4x400.
Yeah.
How, you know, do you pick your discipline, and how do you still add other disciplines into it in order to be like the most complete athlete that you need to be?
Well, I have a background from, I did the heptathlon in mm-hmm. college, and I did both that and the 400 meter hurdles. And I don't know if you pick your discipline as mm-hmm. much as maybe the discipline picks you, or your body does it for you. You don't really.
Oh,
you
really?
You kind of see like where you're, what you're best at. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be a short hurdler, so a 100 meter hurdler. But I'm not fast enough, nowhere near. So the 400 meter was more for me. And I think the event in itself is absolutely horrible. And
then I read you saying like, who would even do that? 400 right. meters by itself is horrible already.
And then you like place things in the way, and you have to jump over them. And
why?
Why? And they get it's funny with the 400 meter hurdles, because the hurdles are kind of. They're not very high. They're only 76 centimeters, mm-hmm. which is not... you should see the hurdles for the 110 for the men. Those are so, so high. But they're... Trust me, they're more than high enough. When you get to the final 100 meters, it's
trusting
like...
you.
It's like someone's like gone and put up the hurdles while you've been running, because that last hurdle is like climbing Mount Everest.
Wow.
I don't recommend the event, but it's the one that I somehow like got myself into,
and that you stuck with, and that's going to be yours now.
Yeah, it is.
That sounds perfect. One thing that I also read about you, how you would describe yourself, is very adaptable, and I found that so interesting, because adaptability can, you know, be applied to so many things and can put you forward mm-hmm. or ahead in life in so many ways. Maybe you can share with us how you think about adaptability, because you also put like two sides to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to be able to adapt to the situation that you're in, just because you're not always... you need to like be prepared for whatever's being thrown at you, and we're in a sport that's it's an outdoor sport, so mm-hmm. you got to be ready for rain, you got to be ready for hot weather or snow even. Yes, we've experienced snow in the summertime.
Crazy, man.
and so adaptability is super important there, and I think. Sorry.
No worries at all. Take your time.
I think me moving around a lot as a kid kind of made me very adaptable. I had to be, because we were living in different cultures, different countries with different cultures, and I was constantly having to make new friends, mm-hmm. and so you just learn to kind of go with the flow a little bit and adapt. Like a chameleon kind of, and I think in life, like you'll learn that that's pretty useful to be able to adapt to different situation and kind of handle whatever is being thrown at you, like I said.
It's important, and it's a big mm-hmm. one, and at the same time it's super important not to lose yourself, right? I mean, it's important to adapt, but you still...
Definitely. You still got to be you.
Yeah. Exactly.
And your values, like, you got
to... Yeah, I was just about to ask, what does this mean, even?
Yeah. No, I mean, you have a... I mean, me personally, I have a set of values that I hold, and I want to... That's, like, what makes me and the person that I am. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking more, like, with adaptability. It's not like you're going to... be someone completely different. You're still like you're still you, but just like a small changed version of yourself, I guess.
Nice.
I think it's important to be able to handle whatever situation is being thrown at you. So
And you just mentioned the different cultures that you grew up in. Are there certain things that you would you say like adapted or integrated into your being, into your set of values until today?
I definitely think moving around and experience all different cultures and meeting different people has shaped me into the person I am today. Mm-hmm. I think it would be cool to see in like an alternate universe to see how I would have turned out if I had just stayed in Norway my entire childhood and upbringing. And I think it would be cool to see kind of how that had affected me and what kind of version of myself. I think to a certain extent I would be like kind of the same, but I think there would be a lot of differences too, just because I think you're being shaped and formed into the person you are based on things that are happening to you and the people you meet and the places you go. So yeah, I definitely think that affected the way I am.
What would you say are typical Norwegian things in terms of culture and teams in terms of how people behave, maybe?
I think I actually when I moved back to Norway, I definitely saw I really like felt that wow, I haven't lived in Norway for a long time. Mm-hmm. It had been 11 years. And
long time,
and
man.
I could definitely tell that there was just like little things that that were so different. And also like in Norway, you kind of there's this thing called Janteloven, which I can't really translate exactly, but it's more it's kind of like you shouldn't think very highly of yourself, and you should be afraid to like speak openly about like the. Your ambitions and goals, and because you shouldn't think that you shouldn't place yourself higher than anyone else, which is like it's good, but I think it's also it could be a little bit compromising, just in form of like the ambitions that you have and like and setting goals for yourself, and the living in the United States, they're completely opposite.
Yes. They're like, oh my God.
My coach was always like, when you're on the starting line, I want you to think that you're going to win.
You're the best.
And yeah. I'm like, looking at my personal best, I'm like nowhere near the top. I was sitting there like a freshman, and my coach was telling me, go out there and win the NCAA, the finals. And I'm like, I'm happy if I can like make it past the first round, you know, or if I get a personal best. And she's like, no, that's wrong. You're going to win it. You're going to win it. And
you're like, mentality.
No, yeah, but I was just like, but that just doesn't, that doesn't make sense to me, because I think that's kind of sad too, because if I, let's say I, which is what happened, like I came, I got a personal best at the NCAA, and I came home like not being satisfied, or because obviously I was expected to win, even though that was completely like I had no chances of winning, but I just felt like I was letting my coach down and everyone else down and myself down, just because like I kept having to tell myself that if I don't win then I'm not good enough, you know. And that's what I like about track, it's so like it's so measurable. You can always you can see progress. You can track your own personal progress, which is a victory in itself. Like if I'm running faster than I've ever ran before, how can I not be happy with that? So I think like little things like that, just like the mentality of things, especially in sports, was that's a big cultural difference.
Oh, I can imagine.
And coming back to Norway too, my coach, he was I think I ran a PR, and he was like over the moon and was like, wow, you've never been this good, and can you believe it? And I was just kind of like, yeah, but I wanted to make it to the semifinals. And he's like, yeah, okay, that'll come later, like you've never been as fast as you are now, that's great, it's progress. I'm like, yeah, I guess. And then I kind of had to change my mentality a little bit. So I think a combination of those two polars are maybe what I need.
Interesting. Yeah. And would you say that you were or have been able to develop into the, you know, mindset of being content at some point? And I mean, I know athletes are never content.
Yeah, but, no, we have this saying in our training group that you can be really, really happy with your results the day you get them, or if you have a good race, like be super happy with it, and then but the day after you're like, okay, cool, but now I want to take it even further. So you should still celebrate your victories, but it's important to still kind of think that, okay, I want more. And yeah. I think that's what makes us athletes. The fact that we're always hungry to develop and progress, and yeah.
So interesting. And I mean, I care so deeply about pro athletes' mindsets, because that's where all the magic happens, truly, you know? And just as you said, you had to switch, or you're trying to switch a little bit from All-American to a little bit of the Norwegian kind of way. What would you say is the most important thing to you personally regarding your mindset to keep you sane? Because I mean, you're in an individual sports as well, which makes it even more all you. It's all pressure, it's all focus, and if you don't make the time, it's you, right?
Yeah, it's definitely it all falls back on me. And yeah, I'm a part of a team, and I have teammates and a coach that I want to I want to make them happy and make them proud. And and also, like, when I'm running with Norway on my chest, I'm representing them too, and all of Norway. But at the end of the day, it's all falling back on me. I'm the only one that can run and can control the outcome. So so you do put a lot of pressure on yourself, but I'm trying more and more to just remind myself that the clock will always start, or the timer will always start at zero for the next race. So you never take whatever bad race you've had in the past, the clock will always start again at zero. And so you try to not like let a previous bad race or a good race too much affect your current race. And I think that's what's keeping me sane in the sport, because I think it's very easy to get caught up in how you've been performing and how you think you're doing and whatnot. And I think you said it well earlier with I lost my train of thought.
Starting at zero, letting it all go, pressure, focus, it's all you, individual sports.
I was gonna refer something my coach said, but now I'm like completely blank.
No worries, I have more questions.
If you
want to keep going, you can tell me later if you want to.
Oh, I don't remember what it was I was trying to say. I had a point, but I got lost in the translation, because
do you want me to pick it up?
Yeah,
because what you just said about this whole letting past performances go and starting at zero again every single time, that's just, you know, this whole concept is so important, not only for a track and field athlete, it's literally what can, you know, make the difference between anyone believing in themselves or not.
Exactly.
And I'm personally incredibly bad at it, and I know that these are the things that keep me back or hold me back in so many ways. So maybe you can teach me how to let the shit go and just start from zero every single time again without letting what you did before affect you.
I think what helped me, I'm not trying to tell you to go and do this, because I was, like I said earlier, I was a heptathlete at one point, and so I did the multi-events, and so the way it works is that you have 7 events over the course of 2 days where you have to get through all of the events and get points, and whoever has the most points in the end wins. And so if you start off with a poor event in the beginning, it's super easy to get caught up in that, and then it'll just go downhill from there, because then you'll bring that into the next event, and you're like getting more and more stressed because you're
thinking about all these points, and so that kind of taught me that you have to keep, like, you have to have a short-term memory and just put the past in the past. Okay, fine, that one didn't work out well, but it's a new event, the clock starts at zero, and I'm just gonna go for it. Something my coach keeps telling me is that he'll look at me before every race and he'll say, go out there, have fun, do your best, because the best, like, that's the only thing you can do. Like, you can only give me your best. You can't give me more than that. Just give me your best and just know that you're getting, I have your back no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that was just so comforting to hear, because
sounds healing too.
Yeah. And that's the kind of people that I need in my life and in my team. People that are in my corner and that won't yell at me if I have a poor performance, because obviously I'm gonna go out there and give my all. And I know, and my coach knows, that I'm the hardest and toughest on myself. Like, I don't need him to stand there and yell at me after a poor race, because he knows that I did my best. And sometimes your best just isn't good enough, and that's fine. But just
it's
knowing
hard,
that,
but fine, okay,
yeah. but knowing that he's always in my corner is just so comforting. So then that's at least, like, then I know that the most important people in my life and my team is at least, like, they got my back. And then the media and other people can say whatever they want, but I know that I've done my best, and I can't do anything more than that. So, yeah, that's comforting. Just knowing that the people that stand you close, they don't need to apply more pressure to you than what you already put on yourself. Because I think as athletes, and even, like, in everyday life, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves.
We do.
And, I think we need to just hold back a little bit and,
take it easier on ourselves. Hey, Natmalia, this is actually the perfect transition. I was going to let you choose the categories, but I'm going to change my mind now. And maybe you can open this little bubble for us and start with our first category, because I feel like this is the perfect fit at this very moment.
It says head coach.
And I would like you to share with our audience right now if there is anyone or anything. We even had people saying running is my head coach.
Yeah.
To tell us if there is anyone or anything in life that either has helped you through one specific situation of hardship or has been there forever and influenced you and your mindset and your performance or you and your being to a certain extent.
This might sound really, really strange, but I've always found that if I'm stressed out or I have a lot going on in my head or in my life, I always sing.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I sing a lot.
I read that about you too.
Yeah.
Guitar and singing.
And it's just a way for me to kind of relax and just let it all out. And so I walk around the house when I'm cleaning, that's like my way of just clearing out my head and kind of getting back on track and just letting it all out. So I'm like belting it out, standing there singing at the top of my throat. I think Axel is going crazy a little bit at certain times, but it's helping me just kind of get it all out and yeah.
Are you picking songs to sing along to, or are you just singing by yourself? And what is the type of music that is giving you the healing or whatever it is that you're feeling?
It's singing. Whatever comes to mind, actually. So I usually just sing. Sure, I'll put music on and sing along too, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking just about singing whatever comes to mind, and it doesn't have to reflect my mood at all. I don't necessarily have to sing sad songs if I'm sad, or it just I don't know, it's a way for me to just kind of it's a reset button, I guess. So it's a nice then I don't get, like, super caught up in my head and let my thoughts wander off too much. So So random songs that come to your mind, English, Norwegian,
yeah, whatever
comes up. Do you have one go-to song that you know always does the deet?
I mean, I've always loved Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. So
really?
I'll do the whole thing. And I think it's like 7 or 8 minutes long. So I'll be going on for a while.
Very dramatic, too.
Yeah, yeah. The like super high parts I'm just kind of struggling with. But it's...
Mamma Mia.
Yeah. But it's a fun one.
That is so interesting. And I mean, it has different elements to it as well, right? I love singing as well. Mm. And it's very physical because, you know, the whole vibration, I think it's real. It changes, like, how your body is literally vibrating. It changes your mood. It does get things out. Mm-hmm. But then the psychological part of it as well. And I mean, I think this is scientifically proven that if you hear your own voice more, you build confidence.
Maybe. Because I don't know why I do it, but on the starting line too, I'll talk to myself, and it's not enough to just like say it around and say it in my head. I have to like physically say it out loud.
Not enough time to sing Bohemian Rhapsody on the starting line.
No, but I'll talk to myself, I have to actually physically say it out loud. Like if I'm running, if I'm going all in for like a rep or for a run, then I have to take like a little pep talk to myself just to, on the starting line. And so maybe what you're saying is right. Like you actually, like the sound of your own voice is making it more more real.
Hi. We have a little homie watching us, a little fan. Oh, he's cute. I would love to speak more about this. Do you? Because I just spoke to Sophia Flösch, the racer. I don't know if you know her.
Yeah.
And she told me that she has 5 words. She prefers not to share them with the public. Mm-hmm. That she repeats and tells herself every time she steps into the car right before the race starts. She 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 goes with her words. And I'm a huge fan of manifesting, and I truly believe that this is, you know, not just something that happens by coincidence if you write down as a kid that you want to be at the Olympics and it actually happens. Do you say the same phrases, the same words to you when you start your race? Or
no, it's
do
not.
You do this situation
it's not
wise?
Something I think about beforehand. I don't have like a set of things that I tell myself. Mm. It's kind of in the moment, but I always remember to keep it it's wrong to say not positive, like if I'm telling myself not to stutter step, for example,
you're going to stutter step,
then I'm going to stutter step.
Yes.
So I have to tell myself what I need to do in order not to stutter step. So I don't tell myself don't stutter step because then I will stutter step.
Yes.
I tell myself long out before the hurdle, long out after the hurdle, whatever, like things that will
that
cause me not to stutter step rather than telling myself not to do it, because
yes.
I think that's I think you're more likely to do what you're not supposed to do if you
100%.
Yeah.
And that's how manifestation works, actually, right? If you're like, I don't want to be sick, you're going to be sick.
Yeah.
But you have to say, I want to thrive. I want to feel strong. I want to feel confident. That's actually how it works.
Yeah, I think so too. I've never thought about it as manifesting, but I think that's what we do. And when we visualize things, or if we set goals for ourselves, like it's a form of manifesting. And I guess I've been doing it all my life since I was little. So maybe that's
interesting.
Yeah.
Love it. So singing is your hat coach. We never had that before. That's another first. I love it. Would you like to pick? I'm going to let you pick the last two ones now.
Let's do this one.
What you got?
Shootout.
The shootout. Okay, this one is on me. I prepared a little set of, rapid fire questions. It was a really not rapid situation with Sophia at all. So I'm going to put out the questions, and you can answer them either shortly or more extensively, whatever you feel like. So I read that, I mean, you said you do compete outdoors most of the time, but at USC you did compete indoors mm-hmm. as well. So which one do you prefer, indoors or outdoors?
Definitely outdoors, because it gives me more time to prepare, because indoor season is more of like a kind of like a break off from practice. So I don't always feel super prepared for indoor season, but it's a nice way of just like changing the scenery a little bit. But I hate the feeling of being unprepared for a race, and I feel like indoor season is always a little bit too early for me. So and there's something psychological about, because the indoor track is two laps, because it's 200 meters. So there's something something mental about, like, okay, you're crossing the finish line, but you're only halfway there. So it feels like running an 800, you know? So I think I do prefer outdoor.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you just said you hate not feeling prepared. Mm-hmm. What makes you feel prepared, and what does it mean? Because, you know, I can imagine, or what I'm thinking about now, it could be either starting the day right,
yeah,
but it could also mean the past 4 months yeah. preparing correctly.
I think it's more the I know, like, well, everything we do at practice is so measurable, like I said. Like, mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. this, I have, like, statistics I can fall back on and see, like, okay, I'm running this and that at practice, then I should be running this in competition. And I've rarely had, if I'm running poorly at practice, I'm not going to have a super great race. So mm-hmm. It's kind of... I like competing if I know that, okay, I've been having solid practices, I've been doing well at practice, and that gives me confidence, just because you see it so clearly that you're actually in shape and you're ready to roll. So, I like feeling prepared.
And actually, the next question would be, do you have a race day routine?
This is kind of funny, because I definitely did before. I've tried in the past couple of years to just get rid of those routines, mm-hmm. just because you can't control what happens in a championship. Because I was always like, okay, I need to have a nap at least like 2 hours before I leave the hotel. And then what do you do if you have a morning race? You're not going to get that. And then I had this weird thing that I had to straighten my hair before a race. It was so stupid. Right. Or something bad was going to happen. And then this one time, this was in college, I hadn't straightened my hair and we were running the relay. And then...
you're like, coach, I can't run.
No, the girls on my team were like, Amelie, why didn't you straighten your hair? And I'm like, what? It's fine. No, it's not fine.
Get out.
And I'm like, no. You guys can't, like, get caught up in my ritual. Like,
yeah, no.
And we actually dropped the baton in that meet, in that race.
Because
I wasn't even part of it, but I'm like, oh, damn, I need to straighten my hair next time. No, so it's just, like, little things like that. Like, obviously, my hair being straight or curly doesn't have anything to do with my outcome. So things like that, I just, like, I needed to put them aside and just be like,
get rid of it.
This is stupid.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I try not to.
No more race day routine.
No, I try not to. I try to get a solid breakfast in and get all my meals in and make sure that I'm not like starving at the starting line. But obviously that's not a routine. That's just like basic living.
Yeah.
and
preparation you should have.
Exactly.
That's nice though. So the next one is, what's more exciting? And I mean, you probably won't be able to answer this. Diamond League, European Championships, World Championships, or Olympic Games?
Olympic Games, obviously.
Very easy to answer, obviously. Yeah. Okay, how so, though?
No, just because it only happens every 4 years. So you want to be... I know like everyone prioritizes the Olympics over everything else. So I know that everyone is in their best shape. So winning the Olympics is the ultimate... that's the biggest thing you can possibly achieve. I think that's what's driving all athletes at that level. I think that's like the big thing happening.
The big thing, man. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite song you listen to before the race? A race.
Not really. I have a playlist and I just kind of... it's a good mix of everything. I don't really have one like go-to song, but I do like to, when I'm warming up, I like to have music playing while I jog. So I don't know, it puts me in this like, it again, it like, it makes me not think too much about the race. It just sets the mood and gets me ready.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you prefer team sports or individual sports, and why?
Let me start off saying I really do like team sports, just because it's nice to feel a part of something, mm-hmm. and that you're not just running for yourself.
Yes.
So I love the relay, and mm-hmm. I really think that's it's fun to be able to be on a team in such an individual sport. But at the same time, I'm really happy that I am doing an individual sport, just because I can only blame myself if something goes wrong. Yeah, because I've done team sports too, like before, played rugby. Soccer and yeah. rugby, and I don't know, I've always like really hated it if I messed up or did something wrong, and then led to us losing or something. So I like the fact that you're kind of on your own when you're out there, and you're gonna get the result that you deserve. No one's gonna stand in your way of it, and no one's gonna help you get there. So yeah, it's all you.
That is interesting, though. I've never thought about team sports in the way that you would actually, you know, carry the weight of yeah. the team. That's kind of what I heard from you sitting right there, right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. So. Because I think I do put a lot of pressure on myself, like we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. and I would hate that, let's say we're favored to win, and then I do make a mistake, and then we don't.
And then you forget to straighten your hair. Like,
what do you mean? Drop the baton. I like the individual sport better.
Interesting. On a scale from 1 to 10, we kind of covered this one, how competitive are you?
Oh, I'm definitely a 12, I think. But actually, what's really interesting is that I think I'm even more competitive in things that don't mean anything. Like, of course, I'm competitive in my sport, but I'm a much better loser and winner in sport than I am in board games. I get really obnoxious, and
that's horrible.
I really have to twist the knife. Like, if I beat someone in a board game, I won't shut up about it. So, nice. Yeah, I'm a sore loser and equally sore winner, or bad winner in board games.
That is very interesting, but fair at least that you say you're a sore winner too. It's okay. We already covered your travel history, at least a little bit. We touched it. Yeah. What would you say is your favorite place to travel to in the world?
Ooh. I would love to go back to Namibia. Mm-hmm. I lived there for 2 years. That was the first place we moved after,
yes.
After living in Norway and growing up there. And I think it was just such a cool country with everything from like wildlife, nature, and the people living there, and the different cultures. And so yeah, that's definitely a place that I want to go back to. I want to take Axel and my entire family back there, just to see how it's changed, and go on the same trips that we went to. And it was really, really cool. So definitely want to go back there.
Have you been back after you moved with your family back in the
days? I haven't.
No.
So I need to go back. So what's
this? 11 years as well, right?
Oh, no, that's more, because I was in 2006. So it's been, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Crazy. All right, then. Goals, maybe.
Yeah.
For after Paris, then.
After Paris, yeah.
You may pick the last one.
Okay.
This will be a German word now.
It says Einwurf.
Oh, incredibly well pronounced, oh,
thank
yes.
you.
Einwurf, it's kind of like, you know, the throw in. I was thinking about like the football, the soccer sidelines, you have to throw it back in. And I would love, and we would love to hear the topic that you brought for us to throw in and talk about.
The topic that I brought.
That you brought here today. No worries.
I think I want to talk a little bit about motivation and like what kind of drives you.
Please.
And how I think that goes for everything that we do in life. Like, you need to have a motivation to do something and to succeed at something. And let's say that's a form of trading, or actually, let me change my topic just because.
Yeah, please.
I think because it's kind of based off of motivation as well. But I think you need to surround yourself with people that you like and that you enjoy being around. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're working a 9-to-5 and you hate the people that you're at working with, and you're not enjoying it, that's gonna. It's going to drain you eventually,
it
and
is.
You're not going to succeed in what you're doing. And I wake up every morning. I have the best training group ever. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to go to practice. I'm excited to go to work because of the people that I'm going to see.
Yes.
And I think that's so important. And that's not just in sports. It's in everything that you do. I think... having fun in what you do is super important. So we always hear that from other athletes. We're like, why are you guys joking so much at practice? Aren't you like aren't you scared of not being able to focus, or isn't it like taking away focus from practice? I'm like, no, it's doing the complete opposite. Like, we're joking around, having fun when we don't need to focus, and then as soon as like we're about to run, then you switch it on. But staying focused throughout the entire training, because we train for many hours a day, that's going to drain you emotionally completely. So you need to be able to loosen up a little bit and have fun with what you do. And I think that makes it so much easier to succeed if you're actually going to work mm-hmm. and enjoying what you're doing. So.
And there's so many people out there who are struggling with just that, with
yeah.
exactly that. They're stuck in a job that is nothing fun, that's nothing
yeah.
light.
And they might be good at it, and they might think that, oh yeah, well, this is a good job, I'm good at it, and it's making a steady income. And that shouldn't matter. Like, you only live once, as cliche as that is, but it's it's so true.
Sophia said that too, just,
yeah.
you know, an hour ago. It's real.
Yeah, but it's so real because you only do get one chance at this whole life thing, so you might as well have fun while you're doing it.
But this leads us directly to, like, the big brother of motivation, mm. I think, and this is courage. Mm. Because, you know, leaving the steady income job, leaving,
yeah.
I don't know, probably you've been brought up in a certain way that led you to taking on a job like that. You know, your value system was created or influenced in a certain way that made you believe that this is good, that this is
yeah.
stable or whatever. So what's your tip or your idea about being able to find the courage to leave it all, to let it all go, and like listen to yourself mm-hmm. and pursue what you truly want?
I think what you just said there is important, that you got to listen to yourself and not kind of follow what everyone else is expecting from you. And because you keep hearing from everyone, oh, you're so good at this, and mm-hmm. I can tell you're thriving and you're doing well and blah blah blah, but if that's not what's making you happy and you're not enjoying it, then you shouldn't be wasting your time on it, no matter how good you are at the
yeah.
job or how much money it's making you or whatever it is. I think if you're going to spend that many hours in a day doing it, then it should be something that you truly enjoy and love. So then my advice is just get out.
Get
out while you can.
Yeah, and just try, I guess, because what's waiting on the other side can be so much more rewarding, really.
Yeah, and you might not be able to find it right away, but I think eventually you're going to find what makes you the most happy, and you're going to thank yourself for it, and maybe even get a little annoyed that you didn't get out sooner.
I love this, and actually this is kind of the final part of our podcast already, because... First of all, thank you so much, Amalia, for doing this, for meeting me, for sharing your story with this mainly German audience, really. And our podcast episodes always end on our guests' pep talk to our audience.
Oh.
And, you know, we kind of already tapped into it, but what is maybe a last thing that you would like to share with the ladies and gentlemen listening to us? on, you know, why it matters so much to truly pursue what you want to.
I think life is short. Now here comes the cliches again. Life is short, and you need to surround yourself with people that give you more energy than they take from you. Mm-hmm. And you're not put on this planet just to work a boring job or do things that people expect you to do. You need to go out there and enjoy it, and yeah, you'll achieve whatever you put your mind to. So just don't be afraid to aim high and go for it.
And that's where we're going to leave it at. Thank you so much, girl. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.